From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
You no doubt have seen news that the USDA plant hardiness zone map was just updated and that half the country once again got reclassified a half zone warmer, just as many of us did after the previous update of the map in 2012. But what does it all mean to gardeners, practically speaking? Today's guest is Dr. Todd Rounceville, a USDA research scientist who was involved in the years-long project that led to the creation of the new map, and he'll help us drill into what it reveals and to other factors affecting plant hardiness. So more in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden comes from Color Blends Wholesale flower bulbs for landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at colorblends.com. Season your spring with Color Blends this fall. Also from High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, featuring 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project certified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com.
I'm so glad to welcome Dr. Todd Rounceville, a USDA horticulturist and research scientist who leads the U.S. National Arboretum Germplasm Program. Todd acted as chairman of the technical review team for the 2023 USDA Plant Hardiness Zone Map, a group of about 40 people across the country. Thanks for making time today, Todd, and it must feel good to see the multi-year effort come to fruition.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. And yes, it's nice to have this out and released to the public. And very rewarding to see very positive comments coming in about both the utility of the map and also that gardeners are saying that it's matched what they've seen in their landscape. So that's nice for that confirmation.
Yes. I think reading some historical papers and so forth that you sent me to do a little homework before our conversation, I think that the first attempts at this kind of mapping were in like 1927. So it's a long tradition sort of trying to figure out what's going on out there. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with the, you know, going back to that era and the number of plants that were being introduced into the states from, you know, temperate regions of the world, it was important to kind of understand what would survive where, because latitude is often a good indicator, but there are other factors involved, of course. And, you know, what these various iterations have found over the years and has kept the tradition going with using this, what we now call the plant hardiness statistic, which is the cold temperature, the extreme cold, being a really helpful predictive indicator about plant survival, perennial plant survival.
Yes. So what zone are you in? Where do you live and garden? What, you're in near Beltsville or where are you?
Yeah, I live and garden in the PG County, Maryland, which is just outside of DC. Mm-hmm. The Arboretum, that the National Arboretum is in DC, and that was a zone 7B, and the Arboretum is now zone 8A.
Mm-hmm. I moved to 6A in 2012. I moved to 5B because I've been in the same garden for a long decades. And so, you know, I've seen it go a whole zone so far in my lifetime. And this new map, the 2023 map, utilizes data from 1991 to 2020, I think. So like a 30-year span, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you just said before what the data point that it kind of looks at. So tell us just briefly about that and a little bit about why this one is so different from, you know, how did half the country kind of shift? I mean, because the easy thing for us all to say as amateurs, you know, is, oh, of course, global warming, you know, but that's not the story. That's not what this is all about exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think there's a simplicity to how the map is generated, but it's not always intuitive just glancing at the zone. So I think understanding that is really helpful to inform people that rely on it exactly what it means, what's you know, potentially changed or not. And again, the plant hardiness statistic is a single data point per year. And that is the coldest temperature recorded on the coldest night. And then the map is generated by taking that data point and averaging it over 30 years. And as you said, for this version of the map, the years range from 1991 through 2020. This map comes about 10 years after the previous map, but we're actually using about 15 years worth of new data, because I think the 2012 map ran up to 2005 data. And so not only are we using new data, those new 15 years, but we also lose the 15 years of averages that began for the last map in the mid 70s and 80s. So there was another part to your question that was a long one.
Well, it's okay. And it's data from more weather stations than in the 2012 map also, isn't that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, there were about 68% increase in the available weather stations for this version of the map. So
right.
Had a lot of new data points, and also some of the weather stations that were used during the last iteration, or actually were not used because they existed, but they didn't have enough data. You know, they didn't go back 30 years. And I think that's part of the reason why so many more were available for this iteration.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of sort of technology advancements in our ability to map, and these experts' ability to map as well. I mean, the maps are more, I don't even know what the word is, you know, it's just so much more sophisticated, isn't it? The detail that can be, I've watched and read some reactions of people, you know, on social media and elsewhere, you know, where they're talking about how, you know, they can see where a mile away from them, where, you know, maybe because of a change of elevation or whatever, where there's a different zone, and, you know, there's a lot more detail, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an important note to make. And it's especially true if you kind of scan the map and you look into areas that have, you know, greater changes in topography. Some of the mountainous areas, you'll see that there's a lot of variation. And that's useful by using the map online and being able to zoom in and really note that some of the topographic changes can really influence even within, you know, at the county level, you may span three or more half zones. You know, there are lower elevation pockets where cold air settles. And I think, you know, some people may live and garden in those areas, and their personal observations over time may have confirmed that they were in one of those frost bottoms. But for potential growers or, you know, that might be wanting to start, you know, a new operation or a new homeowner that's moved to an area, looking at that more fine scale data, the resolution on the map can help inform, you know, how your local site compares to the surrounding area.
Yeah, you shared with me a YouTube video actually from a man called Gardner Scott, I believe, and I'll embed it. It's a great video. Thank you for sharing it. He's a YouTube person, and he kind of does a demo of how we can utilize the map and some of its features that it would be hard for us to explain here just in words aloud. And so I'll embed that with the transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com. But yeah, it's very, there's a lot of enhancements from the previous time, including this much more granular, you know, getting down to almost like half mile increments that we can see our zone. And as you say, in a county, there may be multiple zones because of changes in the topography and so forth. So it's very, very interesting, but it's not the only thing that affects, right, what we what we can grow.
Right.
I think Tony Avent or someone at Plant Delights Nursery posted on social media the other day, you know, about they've tracked their winter lows over the same 30-year period or whatever, and you know that they would have, if they went by the zones, the current map at each time, they would have lost plants in a certain number of those years, because again, it's only one data point, and And, you know, it's, well, plants are vulnerable to lots of things. So I guess I wanted to know what you, because you have, you know, a lot of expertise, what do you think about hardiness? Because it's not just that one average low number, is it? You know?
That's right. That's right. That's a great point. What I think, you know, gardeners know, and certainly Tony Avent knows, is that within whatever zone you are, that there are, you know, the influence of environmental, biotic variables can greatly modify a plant's ability to survive throughout the year, and certainly during the winter. And so, you know, in the winter months, there's a lot of plants that aren't, you know, the cold is an important factor, but so is, as one example, soil moisture. So
yes,
keeping things drier, they can often have more cold hardiness for some, you know, desert plants would be one example. And so in terms of gardeners who may have seen a shift, you know, by a half zone, maybe even a full zone, our general advice hasn't been to go out and, you know, reevaluate your landscape, think about removing things and planting new things because you're warmer. You know, one part of that is understanding your very local conditions, the microsite of your garden, and factors like if you're growing plants on the north side of your house versus the south side. You know, in the winter, the south side will get more sunlight, so things can have some reflective heat and potentially be buffered a little bit and have a better chance. Go ahead.
No, I'm thinking of exactly those types of almost like reading microclimates and whether they're opportunities or they're you know, warnings.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course, it's species dependent, but you know, in my own gardening experience, I think that taking advantage of your microsite and those things like, you know, working with the drainage you have or the sun exposure you have, can shift, certainly more than a half zone. You can get away with, things that may not be rated for your zone or would be rated marginally.
Yes. Well, for instance, I know that you have particular interest and are involved in a research project that includes native magnolia species, and magnolias are a beloved garden plant. And, you know, I used to be in zone five. Well, what was I? I guess I was 5A, then 5B, now I'm 6A. And, you know, even there, if I were to have picked an early blooming magnolia and put it against near to a wall on the south side of my house, where it woke up, quote unquote, early, you know, where those buds, well, I would have had them blasted every year practically and never had flowers. And if I put it somewhere where it could wake up a little later, I could do really well with it. I mean, that's an oversimplification, but that's what we're looking for as gardeners, I think. And again, to avoid those wet feet at all costs, like you said, in winter. I mean, that's the real, that's a sure killer of a lot of things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, when I began gardening, zone pushing, you know, or zone denial, as some people call it, was sort of the ethic I was raised on, because, you know, there were all these new catalogs and, you know, people, you know, like Plant Delights Nursery or the former Heronswood Nursery or so forth. And you could get all these things that were practically just being put in, or were just being put into the marketplace, you know, and in small numbers and so forth. And there wasn't a lot of data about those plants and where they were hardy to, and exactly, you know, not much was known except where they came from, where the explorer had found them many times.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like we tried things, and it's okay to do that, but you have to be aware that you may have losses. Yes. I mean, it's not a sure thing to say, oh yeah, I can grow zone six. I can't just go out right now and say I can grow zone six plants. On the other hand, a friend at Broken Arrow Nursery in Connecticut sort of dared me a couple of years ago to, again, another magnolia, because I love big leaves, to plant the big leaf magnolia. What is it? Macrophylla.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this like waist high plant, you know, and now I feel validated. Now I am a six, a zone six, and that's supposed to be a zone six plant. But it's been very happy even when I was officially a 5B.
Yeah. And, you know, along those lines, it's also good to note what a volatile statistic these data points are, because it is a single data point. So your folks may be in the same zone, or they may have increased, say, a half zone, but there's really no predicting that the next winter, or, you know, a winter in the near future could be more indicative of a colder zone, and a really extreme cold snap could kill a lot of plants that had done well for a few years. And that's why we take 30 years of data into account for the average.
Right. And the other thing that I worry about more in recent years, as we've seen shifts and changes, and even our familiar, if we're in a garden for a long time, our familiar garden, the patterns seem different. I also wonder, especially with woody plants, how well prepared they are, how much chance they've had to harden off, so to speak, with these, like, we don't have, you know, sort of a few gentle, where I am, few gentle early frosts anymore that sort of say, hey, it's coming, watch out, everybody. We kind of will have a hard freeze as our first frost a lot of times now. You know, it'll be dramatic, it'll be very early. And then there's balmy weather, as we're having now this year. And so it's, I wonder how prepared the plants are. Is sort of the hardening off kind of thing, is that also being affected? And are they more vulnerable in many regions because of the change in the so-called fall, you know, time?
Yeah. Well, I think you bring up a good point, which is that there are many ways that cold temperatures can negatively affect plants. You just mentioned some of those early freezes, and with magnolia, you talked about some of the later freezes as they're waking up.
Yes.
So although the plant hardiness zone statistic really, it does not take those factors into account, it's the third kind of major class of cold damage, which is those extreme lows, generally occurring, you know, in you know, midwinter, when things are fairly well dormant. So although this map doesn't take into account, you know, it's a single variable, just like you said when we opened up about some of the broader changes we're seeing with the global climate, although the plant hardiness zone map doesn't take any of that into account, all of it's connected. You know, the number of the so-called heat index, the number of days that temperatures are above 30 centigrade or 86 Fahrenheit, plays a role in plant survival, as do some of these early cold spells and the, you know, the variability of temperatures, the fluctuations during the winter. And doing a multivariate assessment, similar to what Canada does, although it's not part of this map, it's important to really take all of those things into consideration, and think of the plant hardiness zone map as, you know, one of the tools in the gardener's toolbox as a, you know, as a vehicle for risk assessment into the future.
I like that you're saying it's a vehicle for risk assessment, because again, it's not a guarantee kind of a thing. It's not like, oh yeah, sure, you can, you know, it's not like if you go and get your size in a particular garment, if you reorder that garment, it will be the same size will fit you again. Not like that. It's not like that, because as you say, there can be these aberrant times.
Right.
And I think for gardeners, I mean, I know I do it, you know, I think we conflate or confuse weather and climate, you know, factors of weather and climate, right? We, and maybe we should explain the difference between the two from your point of view, you know, what, you know, because I feel like I get attached to the weather, and that's not the bigger picture either.
Right. I think that's, you know, that's easy to do as gardeners, where, you know, personally, for example, I mean, something I do every day is just check precipitation, and it changes my daily plans and like the what's happening in the immediate future that I need to potentially prepare for. But also as gardeners, it's important to think about, you know, the longevity of plants in the landscape and the longer term impacts of their survival and health. And I think that's, you know, the climate portion. It's why we use these 30-year averages in building this map and try to, especially for planting trees, you know, they 30 years tends to be, you know, across all plants, potentially, you know, an average lifespan if you factor in herbaceous perennials. But, you know, with tree planting, I think most of us plant them with the expectation that they'll outlive us, and we want to make sure that we've appropriately sited them both in their, you know, growing conditions in terms of soils and moisture, but also that we've picked appropriate species and provenance material that can last for a long time, based on, you know, broader changes, climate changes, global temperature, variables like that.
So when, you know, when you've watched the coverage of the release of the new map and you know, and been interviewed yourself, and asked about it yourself, what are the things that you want to get across most of all, you know, to people, you know, from the new map?
Yeah. Well, a typical question from the gardening community relates to, as you mentioned, about half the country shifted into a warmer half zone. So folks are asking, what does that mean for me? And we talked about earlier exactly what the plant hardiness statistic is, and one of the map downloads on the Plant Hardiness Zone Map website is what we call the change map, and it just shows by half zone the parts of the country that have shifted to, you know, one half zone, two half zones, up or down. And what you'll see is some fairly obvious bands that run parallel to the zones, but kind of shifted a little bit. And what I'm getting at is that if you were previously on just the edge of a half zone, you could have had a very small change in this 30-year average that pushed you into the new zone. Or if you were on the lower edge, you know, a nearly 5-degree change would have kept you in the same zone. So, you know, again, we're really not suggesting any major changes to how folks are gardening, but to kind of take in the broader pattern across the country, which is that there was a slight increase in the extreme cold temperature, and we would expect that, you know, future iterations of this map that we would see these all of the zones creeping northward. You know, that is correlated to the more global scale changes that we're seeing. So that's really the takeaway. Things have changed, but the change has been minimal, and to not, you know, make major changes to your landscape based on it. The other thing I like to point out to people is that along with the new map, the actual website has been completely redesigned. So there's some really great information there, not just about some of the technical information about how the map was created and some of the changes that we saw, but there's some terrific resources there that are really aimed at any user of the map, and they range from some of the more practical information for folks that might be getting into gardening about soil health, how to manage weeds in the landscape. And then it goes on to also feature some of the work that's being done across ARS, you know, across the country by different ARS researchers that whose work intersects not just with plants, but with, you know, again, soil health, insects and diseases, anything that has a relation to the plant hardiness zones.
I'm glad you brought that up. And so in the last couple of minutes, because the other thing that I've definitely noticed, and look, I'm a birder. And so over the last decade or more, I've noticed, you know, there's changes in ranges of birds, for instance, you know, and I see birds I didn't see here 20 or 30 years ago, and so on and so forth. And that's true also of pests and even certain types of diseases, the in a sense, like that they can expand their territories as well. They're recognizing the opportunity as well that there's a longer season or a milder climate, you know, a little farther up and a little farther up and a little farther up the map, you know. So gardeners are also contending with that, yes?
Yeah, that's true. And you know, I would say it works both ways. There are animals and microorganisms that may increase their range during warmer winters.
Yes.
It opens up habitat, but by the same token, there's also some, I think, especially with some of the insects and microorganisms, that they do need cold sometimes to complete their life cycle and get the chilling that they require. So I think that would vary species to species, but you know, things are very synced up with temperature for life cycles. So it does make a difference.
Yeah. Well, Todd Rounceville from USDA, I'm fascinated, and I'm so glad you could make the time today to explain this to the listeners and to me a little bit more. And I hope I'll talk to you. Actually, I hope I'll talk to you about native magnolias again soon, because that's something really interesting. So thank you for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. And I would love to talk about magnolias anytime.
Yes, absolutely. All right, good. It's a date. And thanks to all the rest of you for tuning in. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden comes from Color Blends Wholesale flower bulbs for landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at colorblends.com. Season your spring with Color Blends this fall. Also from High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, featuring 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project certified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.